You're listening to Sound Poetry. I am your host, David Gilmore.
You're listening to Sound Poetry on Radio Tacoma, KTAH LPFM 101.9. I'm Steve Niebel, sitting in for David Gilmore. Today we have Ken Waldman, who's made his living the past decade touring North America as Alaska's fiddling poet. He has published 20 books, 16 of them are poetry. He was a college professor for several years, and he holds an MFA in creative writing from the University of Alaska in Fairbanks. Christy and I met Ken at Folk Alliance International in Kansas City last month, and what do you know, he showed up at our door, and here he is.
So, well, yeah, I'm in Tacoma because I'm going to be in Seattle flying to Alaska, and we've been nearly running into each other. We were figuring out for like 30 or 40 years we've been in some of the same places. We just haven't been in the same room at the same time like we were in Kansas City.
Right, that's right. Yeah, we both have been to Nome, Alaska.
Oh God, yes.
And neither one of us has forgotten about that.
Definitely not.
So why don't you just kick it off and just read something for us?
I read something, or I'll tell you what I'll do?
Oh, I know. Let's do the fiddle. Yeah.
Well, actually, what I'll do is I'll do something that I do a lot, where I'm not going to read this. I'm going to recite a poem. If you saw me, you would not only see me playing the fiddle, but you would see me reciting a poem without looking at the book. It's a poem called "Old Time Fiddle Lesson." It goes like this: to learn, lock yourself and your fiddle in a room all winter and practice till you play with a twisty, heartfelt, rhythmic punch that approaches trance. A fiddling's not technical repetition anyone can master. It's the sound you make once you know in the blood you clog with your fingers while that old devil music dances inside the box. Thank you, Steve.
That's very nice, Ken. How did you decide to become a fiddling poet?
Well, in Alaska, I am proof that anybody can be anything. I moved to Fairbanks in the interior of the state in 1985, which is, God, how'd that happen? Close to 40 years ago, to pursue graduate school, an MFA in creative writing. And I arrived there. I was in my 20s still. I could barely play the fiddle and had never written a poem in my life. I'd written prose, I'd written short stories, but I played a little bit of fiddle, and I lived in a cabin in the woods with no running water. And in the 3 years in that program, I completed enough of a short story collection that I got my thesis, I got my MFA, but I also started writing poems, and I played fiddle every day in that cabin. And so I got to become a little bit better of a fiddle player. And when I started writing poems, one of the subjects I wrote about was about this type of old-time Appalachian string band music. So when I started in a few years after that, being in public more with the fiddling, it made sense to combine poems about the fiddling with playing tunes, and hence 30 some odd years later, it has grown in ways which I would never have thought, but I could play some fiddle, I was getting better, and I was writing about it, and it just made sense if I was going to be sharing poetry to share poems about the fiddle and then play. And then as I've kept meeting people, I have friends all over North America, and actually I have friends around the world, where if I'm doing events, I can have them join me, which I have the 12 CDs in addition to the 20 books and the CDs. They're not solo. I have people playing with me too. And so it happened. But in Alaska, like I say, you can do anything. So I arrived there without these skills. And one of my jokes on stage is 10 years later, after moving to Fairbanks, where I couldn't hardly play fiddle and never written a poem, I'm Alaska's fiddling poet, self-proclaimed.
16 books of poetry. That's a lot of books.
Well, I'm older now. I'm in my 60s. And I've never been married and I have no kids. So they've become, in a sense, my children, is writing these poems. And as I've done it longer, I have another, the books are set in Alaska. And then I have others. I have a book of all sports poems. I have actually a creative writing manual called The Writing Party. And within, embedded in that book, is a full-length collection of poems about writers and writing. I've written a bunch of collections about, I'd say, political material.
You know, I was going to say, I think you should read one of those Trump sonnets. He has an entire book of sonnet.
Oh, I have 8 books, and I've written a 9th that's not published, and there's going to be a 10th. And what I would say, Steve, too, is that if people are interested in, like, saying, who is this guy? There's Ken Waldman, KenWaldman. You go to KenWaldman.com. But if you're politically inclined, and this doesn't just say, I never want to hear that guy's name again, you can also go to TrumpSonnets.com. I have this other website that talks about that. And I'll read, let's see, I have 8 books. The first one I started writing the day after the election, and because of circumstances, November and especially December 2016, I was getting a full-length collection really quickly. And I have a friend, a publisher friend in Michigan, a fellow who's a fine poet himself, and he wears a lot of hats. His name is M.L. Liebler, Michael Liebler, but M.L. is how he goes by. And he has a press called Ridgeway Press. And in mid-December, I said, ML, I've written these Trump sonnets. If I write another 10 or 15, I think I have a full-length book. Can we have it out by the inauguration in January 2017? And I read him a few poems over the phone, and he said, sure. And we called it Trump Sonnets Volume 1, The First 50 Days. And that was a joke title, but now I'm up to Volume 8. And I guess I'll read one from the orange book, volume 1, and then one from the green one, volume 8. And I should read, I guess I'll read the opening poem, which I was not going to read in any way. But it's the number of the ones in this first book were in Donald Trump's voice. And then I wrote poems to him. And then this first poem that opens the book, it wasn't the very first one I wrote, but this was written in either November, probably November 2016. So, you know,
of course, you know that when we broadcast this, that it's going to be out there in the air, and Donald Trump will be looking for you.
But he doesn't know, but he cares. But anyway, this is the opening one to Donald Trump from Manhattan. So this is, I don't know if this is prescient, but this is the one that opens the book back, you know, was written before the inauguration in 2017. That was, I remember. But anyway, to Donald Trump from Manhattan. Vindictive, vengeful, rude, mean, petulant, bullying, conniving, so much lying, cheating, swindling, exaggerating, a filthy boor, predator, miscreant, creepy little boy, strange adolescent, proud lecher, loud, crude, lewd, horrifying, terrifying, so antagonizing, thin-skinned narcissist, vicious pissant, sociopathic, misogynistic, appallingly unapologetic, unstable, insatiable, flammable, venomous old punks boiling for trouble and international embarrassment. Meet Donald, the next U.S. president. That opens this whole, I've written, I think, over 700 so far, maybe. They're in 8 books. And the first one is the first 50 days. And I wrote 33 commentaries, 33 dreams. I wrote the international edition where I made imagined voices from around the world responding. The fourth one is volume 4, the Shrunken Soul edition, where I have all these folks there, voices there in his circle of people, plus some in his voice. Volume 5, 6, and 7. 5 is his early virus monologues. Virus 6, his middle virus soliloquy. Volume 7, his further virus monologues, all in Donald Trump's voice. And Volume 8, the final 4 months, and I have voices from around the country. And I have one that I'm going to read, I like to read, called Seamstress, Detroit, Michigan. They don't make it easy for us, do they? IDs, long lines, standing for hours, every little thing harder than it needs to be, just so we can vote and have our small say in how the state and country goes. The way they close polling stations, I guarantee it's to make us quit. But life is a tree, we've got to keep climbing, and every day there's another branch, so we go higher and higher. I'll keep on with the bother, because that's what I know. There's a big fire in me lit by my mother and father and all my brothers and sisters. We won't be silenced. We can't. We won't. So we vote.
So a bit obsessive there with that. So how much is it to buy the whole collection?
Well, what each of the books is $15. So if you would say 8 times 15, 120, I go, God, if you're going to get all 8, it's half price is what I do, is for 60. And then there's a volume 9 that hasn't been published yet. Ridgeway Press in Michigan has done them all, but my plan is to write a volume. The volume 9 is the fall of the House of Trump. Volume 10 will be the ghost edition. It hasn't been written, not a word of it yet. But when I get all 10, they will turn into one big book with 800 plus sonnets, and I'm going to try to find an appropriate publisher. And, that would be probably a $20, $25 book. So you might want to wait, but I've had some people buy all 8, and then they parcel them out as gifts. And a number, maybe, and if you ask right, Steve, I will do that, that a lot of the poems, the majority actually, are in Donald Trump's voice. And I've read some to Trump supporters, Trump voters, who will like the poems in his voice, and they say, I want to buy the book. I said, it's satire. You're not going to like the book. And they say, but I want to buy that. I want to support what you do because you have a sense of humor with this. And, I want to buy your book. I said, you're not going to like the book. I want to buy the book. How much? I say, you're not going to like the book. It's 15, but for you, 20. And then they'll give me a $20 bill and I'll give them the book. And then they'll say, well, I want to support the arts. And I don't agree with everything he does, but I'm still, I'll vote for him. I like his policies. And
so you're Alaska's fiddling point. Let's go to Alaska.
Okay. Let's go to Alaska. Let's get away from that.
Christy and I both read your poems about Nome, which we were particularly taken with, having been there before and had that experience. So why don't you pick out a poem? Or
I can definitely, I might do a couple short ones for you. I have a few favorite poems, and they're towards the end of the first collection that I had came out in 2000, and it was a publisher who now the fella has passed away. His name is John Crawford. He has something called West End Press out of Albuquerque, and he was a venerable, experienced publisher. The books were distributed by University of New Mexico Press, and he liked both working class and poems that might have material with indigenous cultures. And you're in Nome, it's half white and half native. I'm going to read a couple poems.
What got you to Nome?
What got me to Nome? I moved to Fairbanks in 1985 for that MFA program in creative writing, and I finished in 88. I had been living in Seattle the year before, but I'm originally from the East Coast. But I thought, I'll go up to Alaska, get this degree, and I'll come right back to the Northwest. And then Alaska was just, I didn't feel like I was done. And I finished that program, and I applied for jobs in rural Alaska places. I think I maybe even applied for a job in Nome, but I didn't get any of them. So my default was not to stay in Fairbanks, a place I, to this day, I love, but I moved to our capital, Juneau, which was a little bit of a detour, but I got some experience. I was teaching some writing over the telephone. I did some other jobs in Juneau for a year. Then I got a job in Sitka as a visiting assistant professor in the University of Alaska system, which led in the roundabout way to there was an opening in Nome. I applied, and at the last minute I got this job, tenure track, which meant supposedly I would have, you know, if I did what I was supposed to do, I would get tenure and I would have a secure job for as long as I wanted. Hence, I moved to Nome in 1990, and I was there for 2 years. I had an illness time, and I had to leave, but that's what got me there.
Okay.
I'm going to read these two short poems, but they will, I think, I know you'll like them, Steve, and you probably don't even know these poems, and I hope the listeners like it too. One is called Missionary. One in a billion, I would say, of the force that sailed me from Philadelphia to Chapel Hill to Seattle. Then Fairbanks, Juneau, Sitka, Nome, that last spot of northwest Alaska tundra coast, the jump off to Savunga, Shishmaref, Unalakleet, Koyuk, Stebbins, and the rest. Places I learned as I'd once learned home. The question, why had I traveled such distance toting books, a fiddle, and other white man tools? To prove the vast sweep of wind? To live Conrad's supreme fictional wilderness darkness? To report, we are all kin, a team of survivors hunting, dreaming, gathering the edge. That's one poem, and I'll read this other poem that's, it's called, it has a form, it's called a villanelle, where lines keep repeating, and it actually was accepted in an anthology of villanelle, a poem with villanelle, and it was in there with like, there's a Dylan Thomas famous villanelle, like, do not go gentle into that night.
You mentioned we all become hunters. Where did that terminology come from?
Well, it's just like it's a subsistence culture out there. So the idea that some folks that come out to that part of the world are literally, have been missionaries. I guess my mission was to, I was out there with the writing and then with music too, but I was thinking that bringing or having read A Heart of Darkness, Joseph Conrad's, you know, set in Africa, somebody going, a white person. I felt like, what am I doing? I'm in, like, I'm taking my fiddle, going to villages where I'd meet my students who I'd be teaching over the phone, but I would travel to villages to meet students, and I would take my fiddle, and I felt that here I was, like, really, like, one in a billion, that from the East Coast, went to college in North Carolina, ended up in Seattle, then to those places that are more populated, Fairbanks, Juneau, and then Nome is 3,500 people. But then from there, going to these villages, it felt like, okay, I am out here and I'm in a subsistence culture, but I'm with my, the other white man tools, the books, the writing, the fiddle, and literally we're on the edge and that's what we're hunting. You know, we're all hunters in our way. So that's where that came from.
I remember Native peoples talking about their identity as hunters there, which,
yes,
in spite of the fact that they were living in a modern culture, they still were very much attached to that identity.
And I haven't been out there since the late 90s. I was taught there in the early 90s, and I was going back through as a visiting artist after that. But I haven't been back there, so I'm sure as things were changing then, this was pre the way the internet has become, just having computers out there and television out there was making changes, but now it must have sped up a bunch. A few years ago, I've had work, and actually just a few years ago around Bethel, which is a Nome is Inupiat Eskimo region in the state, and Bethel is the Yupik Eskimo. It's a different culture, but I've been out as recently as I guess it's been about 4 years was the most recent time I was in Bethel. I was there for a week. You know, things are changing out in these rural places in Alaska. I'm going to read one more poem, this villanelle. It's called I Jokes, and I remember when I moved to Fairbanks, I had students from rural places, and there's an expression, instead of like, you know, I'm teasing you, they just say, I jokes. And I heard that a lot, and I wanted to honor that. And I turned it into a poem called I Jokes. So I'm going to share this. And it's, once again, it's a villanelle, so certain lines keep repeating, which adds to the both the difficulty, but gives it some poetic aspects. In Nome, we say I jokes, quick and deadpan at the end of a joke. I jokes, we say, the Eskimo English sticky on tongue. In Nome, we say I jokes, all right, could be a cluck or croak, or shyly, mouth covered by hand at the end of a joke. I jokes is how we poke fun at our people and plans. In Nome, we say I jokes, because even though broken, we've survived a clan at the end of a joke. I jokes, we say, our spoken coda, our last proud stand. In Nome, we say I jokes at the end of a joke. I jokes.
That's some fun.
Yeah. And these poems, these couple poems, I'm going to share one more poem from this. I have a favorite poem that I will share sometimes. And the poems I do a lot in public, I can do a whole show without looking at any of the books because I do those poems a lot. And like the missionary poem and the I Jokes poem, I don't do that often. And this poem, I do a little bit, but not all the time. But it's really, if I had a favorite poem, I say, this is it. It's called Village Fiddle. And it relates to that poem, the missionary poem, where I, you know, taking a fiddle out to places, where when I met my students, these were college students, the classes would be in the evenings on the phone, and there would be phones in the villages, so I could go to the villages to meet my students and conduct the class there. But I'd arrive earlier in the day, and I would, every village had a school, every school had a principal, principal had an office. I'd find my way to the office and say, I am in your village for the next several hours before I have my evening class. The planes would fly in the morning. And can I go in and do some writing and play fiddle for the kids in the school? And I would just show up. You know, these days I set these up 6 months, a year, 18 months out. I would just show up the day of, assuming the planes could land. And the principals would always say yes. And there's a village on St. Lawrence Island called Gamble. It's about 40 miles from Siberia. And it's a far, far place. And a teacher there that I had been to, had been in her class, the third and fourth grade, or fourth and fifth grade teacher, said the kids had never seen a violin before. So I thought of myself as kind of, I'm being a historic figure coming out here. And I wrote this poem kind of in response to that. It's called Village Fiddle. This is my, I think my favorite poem. I toted my junker, side seam already cracked, an old cheap box of wood that would take the steep banks of small planes aiming for runways, the bumps and jostles of sleds hooked to snow machines, the ice, the wind, nights in the villages. Higher education missionary, I made rounds of students' homes where I visited but never fit, to liaisons' offices where the state-issued equipment sometimes worked, to local high schools and elementaries where I volunteered service. Fiddle closer to my heart than the backpack full of books. Deed, fiddle closer to my heart than the frozen, broken truth. Bloody pump buried in utter darkness. Quick to unsnap the case, I scratched tunes where no one had. Played real lap old time music to Eskimos and the odd whites in that weathered land. The pied fiddler I might have been, gently placing the beat up instrument in others' hands and giving up the bow. Good for smiles and laughs. Random questions and comments. A third grader. It must be like having a dog always making noise. You must never get lonely. A high schooler. Is it hard to learn? One of my college students. Why are you out here? Where is your family? So that just kind of says it. And there's a famous line. We were talking about this, I think, over dinner last night, Steve, is that, you know, when you're teaching, you know, you're always like learning, and you're like, you know, you're learning with the students. And, you know, if any of the listeners landed, if they haven't been to Gamble, and it's a hard place to get to. You get to Nome, and then it's like the furthest tip of St. Lawrence Island. You would look at a very, even to this day, I haven't been there, but I know it's still going to be an impoverished place. When I was there, running water was in the school, in the laundromat building, and the principal. They had a flush toilet. Everywhere else, it was honey buckets. You know, just had a bucket in, you know, a room where you would, you know, do your, you didn't have to go outside. Like, I lived in Fairbanks, I had an outhouse, but it was, you know, they had honey buckets. And it would say, it's afar and it's not a place of means, but they saw me as the poorest of the poor, because they have family. Everybody is related. Everybody's a cousin or a second cousin with an auntie and an uncle. But because I didn't have family out there, they go, why are you out here? Where is your family?
I love the analogy of the fiddle with a pet.
Yes.
That's really good. You must never be lonely because
you always have this. Your dog always making noise. You must never get lonely. Really? That's like a little kid saying like this, wow, that's like really cool. But they'd never seen a violin before. They'd seen guitars, but they'd never seen violin, fiddle.
Right.
So yeah, so that's... from this first book, Nome Poems, and then I have another poem I feel like doing that I can recite that kind of talks about metaphorically how I got to Alaska, and this is a poem I do a lot. I usually do it with a fiddle tune too, but I don't have to play the fiddle, but it's a poem called The Road, circa 1978. It's from my friend Howard Nelson, and I'll do the poem right now, and it's nice because, you know, you're on the radio and there's going to mention some literary people. It's going to mention some musicians too. So it's kind of a poem, but it's metaphorically how I got to Alaska. So The Road, circa 1978, for Howard Nelson. We studied Kerouac, Ginsberg, Kesey, Hunter S. Thompson, followed Lou Reed, Frank Zappa, Sleepy LaBeouf, The Dead. Knowing we somehow need the marathon drive across West Texas, New Mexico, Arizona desert. Two recent East Coast college grads guzzling bad coffee and beer at all hours in forlorn bars. Gambling time that didn't matter on a geography and spirit that might. Hitting California midway between midnight and dawn. An extra bright February full moon shone like a ghost of a lamp as we parked our Dodge van, slapped hands, and jumped out radiating caffeine at that cool and shadowy border. Climbing back in, popping open brews, we shoved John Coltrane in the deck, lit another smoke, spun the wheel, then rattled back on the road aiming for Los Angeles, the Pacific, beyond. And, you know, that's the poem, and I go, and beyond, and I say, well, that's Alaska, but then in 2015, I got a gig in Australia doing the poetry with the fiddling, and I go, that is beyond, is Australia. And then, as I've matured further, I have learned that beyond is wherever I am that day. So right here doing this conversation in radio is beyond, and being right here in Tacoma, you know, what KTAH is beyond, and, you know, everywhere is beyond, and I love doing that because it's like, yeah, Alaska's beyond, but we can talk about being right here and now, and that's beyond, because here we are.
It's been really great having you today, Ken.
Thanks, Steve. It was, you know, it's a pleasure being able to converse and share some of what I do. Thanks.
You've been listening to Sound Poetry with Ken Waldman, Alaska's fiddling poet. I'm Steve Niebel, sitting in for David Gilmore. It's been really great having you today, Ken.
Thanks, Steve. It was, you know, it's a pleasure being able to converse and share some of what I do. Thanks.